Im bechukosai teilechu v'yes mitzvosai tishmeru v'asisem osam v'nasati gishmechem b'itam v'nasena ha'aretz yivulah v'etz hasadeh yitain piryo v'hisig lachem daish es batzir uvatzir yasiges zara v'achaltem lachmechem lasova v'shavtem lavetach be'artzechem. If you will follow my decrees and observe my commandments and perform them, then I will provide your rains in their time, and the land will give its produce, and the tree of the field will give its fruit. Your threshing will last until the vintage, and the vintage will last until the sowing. You will eat your bread to satiety, and you will dwell securely in your land.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Bechukotai. Recording and first broadcast Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 15th day of Iyar, 5774, corresponding to the 15th of May. In the Omer calendar last night, that would be Wednesday night for Thursday, we counted 30 to the Omer, which is 4 weeks and 2 days. That's if you're listening on Thursday. That's the count. Likely you are not hearing this on Thursday. I am recording right now. It's 2:45 in the afternoon. By the time I finish, it'll be close to 4:30. And by the time it gets put up on Arut Sheva or on the OU radio website, you won't probably be hearing this until evening, in which case we will be counting 31, which I'm allowed to say now in the full shine of the sun. Anyway, that's the way it works. The first place that the show goes up is the Torah Tidbits website, ttidbits.com. That's where you can find both halves, and I leave on last week's show each week and the current show. And that should be up before 4:30 if all goes well. Anyway, that will give you a chance if you jump the gun to listen to it while it's still Thursday. Neither here nor there, as they say. The opening music was a cappella. On the album it says may be listened during Sfirat HaOmer. And the album is called Matt Belzer's Connections. The piece that I have is the beginning of a track called Misfit the Second. Where that name comes from, I don't know, and even if it's explained on the album jacket, well, I don't have that at my fingertips either. I just found the disc in my file and played it for you. In the beginning of the second half, I will have another short piece from one of the songs on Matt Belzer's Connection. Without further ado, let us say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shimava koli tehiena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Imavonot tishmoria Adonai mia amod. Ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kivita nafshi v'lidvoro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mishomerim l'boker shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'meafela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv. Vinomar, Amen. It's a sunny day in Yerushalayim. This morning there were some wispy clouds, but by and large the day is sunny and pleasant, little on the warm side, warmer than we've had the last couple of days anyway. And that's the story in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. Bichukotai, with its partner Sedra Bahar, which we read last week, are one of the pairs which are combined in a regular 12-month year, one Adar year, and are separated in a Shana Me'uberet, what's called a leap year, a 13-month year, a year that has two Adars. It is not as neat as Tazria Metzora and Acharei Kedoshim, which follow exactly that kind of system. Bahar Bechukotai in Israel are sometimes separated in a regular year in order to allow Chutz La'aretz to catch up to us when we jump the gun by reading Parshat HaShavua on what would be the eighth day of Pesach, which we don't have. In any event, don't have to worry about that this year. This year is a regular Shana Me'uberet. The Sedras are divided both here and in Chutz La'aretz, and that meant a small reading last week of 57 Pesukim verses, and this week 78, not of the larger Sedras. Combined, they make for a nice full reading, and separate gives us an opportunity to sort of look at the two separately. We looked at Bahar last week. And when you get to Bechukotai, we are able to look at it on its own. But combined, there's an important message there. In Bahar last week, we had the laws of Shemitah, the sabbatical year, and of Yovel. But let's focus on Shemitah for a moment. And as such, just like all mitzvot are presented to us in the Torah in Bahar presented us with the details of Shemitah, with the implied requirement of following the mitzvot, and the implied warning of not violating the mitzvot. It's in Bechukotai where we see the dire consequences of disregarding mitzvot in general and Shemitah in particular. But maybe I should say all of the above later. I won't, because I said it already now, and I'm not going to edit and move this piece. But let's go to the beginning of Bechukotai. I purposely read the first three verses rather than just the first one, as I usually do, in order to give a certain completeness to the offer. God says, if you will follow my statutes and my mitzvot, you will keep and do them. And the if here is not really your choice. And if then, there are a few times in the Torah that the word im, aleph mem, meaning if, are used. And we are taught by the oral law that God really wasn't making it so, you know, t- take it or leave it kind of thing. In this case, we can say, you must follow God's statutes. If and when you do, God promises beneficial rain in its proper time and wonderful, bountiful yield from the ground. And the portion ended that I read, with Vishavtem Lovetach Ba'artzechem. You will dwell securely in your land. Securely and safely. This is a promise of peace in Israel. Commentaries point out that there are two types of peace which we yearn for. One is peace from our enemies outside, and the other is peace within the various segments of the Jewish people, meaning the problems from the inside. And both are promised. Now, the promise of safety and security from our enemies of out are spelled out in the psukim that follow those three that I read. V'natati shalom ba'aretz u'shchavtem ve'ein macharid. God continues by saying, I will provide peace in the land, and you will lie down with none to frighten you. I will cause wild beasts to withdraw from the land. That's the natural problems that we face, symbolic of those natural problems. And a sword will not cross your land. That, of course, refers to our enemies and their counterparts to the sword today, be they missiles, mortars, rockets, bullets, grenades, etc. You will pursue your enemies and they will fall before you by the sword, etc. So there's a piece coming up about peace from your enemies. And then there is a portion about elaborating on the beneficial yield, the bountiful yield, which we will get for the performance of mitzvot. The Torah continues with the promise, or the reiteration of the promise, V'hithalachti b'tochechem, God says he will walk among us, V'hiti lachem lelokim, he will be our God, V'atem tiyu li la'am, and you will be unto me as a nation. Ani Hashem Elokechem, asher hotzeiti etchem me'eretz Mitzrayim. I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, the land of Egypt, mihiyot lahem avadim, from being to them slaves, va'eshbor motot ulechem, and I will break the yoke, the rods of the yoke, va'olech etchem komemiyut, and allow you to walk upright. Now that is a total of 11 psukim that basically start and are the then of the if-then statement at the beginning. Im b'chukotai teilechu, if you follow the mitzvot, then all these beneficial and good things will happen. What happens now from verse 14 of the chapter, which is the, in this case, the 12th verse of the Sedra, you have the flip side of the coin. And it makes you tremble. V'im lo tishmu li, but if you don't listen to me, v'lo ta'asu et kol mitzvot ha'ela, ha-mitzvot ha'ela, and you don't do all of these mitzvot, v'im b'chukotai tim'asu, and if you will be disgusted with my mitzvot, or disgust them, V'im et mishpatai tig'al nafshechem, levilti asot et kol mitzvotai, lahafrechem et briti. If you choose to disregard all of the commandments, thereby annulling the covenant with me, then I will return quid pro quo. What follows, or what started with this piece, is a longer portion of the Torah that is known as the Tochacha. The Tochacha is an admonition or a reproach, very, very heavy in what it threatens for lack of compliance with God's commands. And as I said before, mitzvot in general, but very specific focus on Shemitah and on our hold for the land. I wanted to point out that the promises, if we follow the statutes of God, of all kind of good things, seem to be that the promise is only for Eretz Yisrael. Does not say anywhere in the Torah that if you find yourselves in exile, and worse, if you choose to remain in exile with Eretz Yisrael opening its arms to welcome you, then you still have to keep mitzvot, but they don't come with a promise that if you keep the mitzvot, then such and such will happen. There is reward for doing mitzvot, but not that same nationwide promises, if we follow the Torah, that are included here in the beginning of Bechukotai and elsewhere in the Torah. The key, Vishavtem Lovetach Ba'artzechem. You will dwell in tranquility in your land. And therefore, the flip side of it, if you don't follow God, then you will be spit out of the land. And that I mentioned last week, not in the context of this serious, heavy reproach and admonition, but in the straightforward facts of how God expects us to follow mitzvot in general, the laws of the land of Eretz Yisrael in particular. Besides the admonition, the tochacha here in Bechukotai, there's another one with different kind of wording and sentiments, but the same heavy admonition to what happens if we don't keep mitzvot in Parshat Ki Tavo. One is shortly before Rosh Hashanah, the latter, and the other is shortly before Shavuot. It's not as shortly, or it's more than shortly, this year. Usually, Bamidbar is the Seder before Shavuot, and then Naso is the Seder right afterwards. This year, Naso precedes Shavuot, and the Seder after it is Beha'alotcha. But still, from Pesach after Pesach, getting closer to Shavuot, the admonition about keeping the Torah and what happens if we don't, and approaching Rosh Hashanah, the same kind of thing, with a tochacha there. Now, in the lead tidbit of this week in the printed version and on the internet, I basically referred to these heavy words of admonition, so heavy that there were communities in previous generations that did not want to call anybody to the Torah for the reading of these portions. It was considered like an embarrassing thing, a slap in the face, a sad thing. So they would call a person to the Torah. He would make his opening brachot and then his closing brachot after a few verses. And he would stand by the Torah and they would continue reading the Tochacha, but nobody had that aliyah. That was not a very acceptable procedure. So what you have today is two things. Number one, in most communities, the person reading the Torah drops his voice almost to a stage whisper to still be heard, but definitely lower, not to read these embarrassing words and these harsh words out loud. And the other custom is who you call to the Torah. In many shuls, the person, the gabbai, who is in charge of giving out aliyot throughout the year, he's the one who gets this aliyah, so that nobody can say, he probably doesn't like me. He gave me this depressing aliyah. So he takes it for himself, or the Baal Korah takes it for himself, or in some communities, the rabbi of the shul. One way or the other, they're not pleasant words to listen to. They are words of strong admonition, and they should make us feel as if we really need to toe the mark, because why have to tell me in such heavy, threatening terms of what happens if I don't do the mitzvot? I want to do the mitzvot. I'm glad to do the mitzvot. That's what I live for. Unfortunately, not everybody says that, or not everybody means that, or not everybody ends up doing that. One way or the other, it is a very powerful wording and sentiment, and I refer to it in the lead tidbit as the sledgehammer, where God comes down very, very heavy, like a sledgehammer, of what happens when we don't keep the mitzvot, and he acts upon those words as well, as he has in different periods of Jewish history, most notably the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash and the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. But we've had other black, black periods in our history, and those are pretty much the fulfillment of God's threats. And we look to the fulfillment of his promises much more so. Okay, the point I was trying to make in the lead tidbit is that we have many other portions of the Torah which are softer in their admonition and reproach, and we need to heed God's call in all of those other places so that the tremendous heavy sledgehammer boom is not lowered on us, God forbid, for not hearkening to the other words. Best example, in my opinion, is the second passage of the Shema. V'haya im shamoa tishmu el mitzvotai, asher anochi mitzaveh etchem hayom. If it will be that you hearken to my commandments that I command you today, to love Hashem your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, then I shall provide rain for your land in its proper time, the early and the late rains, that you may gather in your grain, your wine, and your oil. And it continues with various promises. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Bechukotai. Bum, 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 na na na. Now let's continue on that same second passage of Shema, because the same thing that I described happening with the Tochacha happens there also. Because after the good things, it says, Hishomru lachem, pen yiftel levavachem, beware for yourselves, lest your heart be seduced, and you turn astray, and serve gods of others, and prostrate yourselves to them. Then the wrath of God will come upon you, and he will seal the heavens, and you will not get your beneficial rain, and the land, the ground, will not yield its produce, and you will quickly be lost from the land which God gives you. Somehow, as parallel as this is to the Tochacha, first point that is obvious, but it needs mentioning here, is the Tochacha is once a year in Bechukotai, and a second time a year in Ki Tavo. V'hoya im Shamoa is every single day, minimum twice a day, every mezuzah on every doorpost has this admonition written in it, second of the two passages in the mezuzah. Every pair of tefillin has this parsha written in the Shel Yad and in the Shel Rosh, and it is something that we are familiar with, we are comfortable with. And I refer to this, rather than the sledgehammer, as the tap on the shoulder. And maybe, which I didn't have time to expand or space to expand upon in the lead tidbit, but maybe I'm talking in a more general sense about messages that we are supposed to receive, which depends on how responsive and sensitive a person is, and then reminders need to be stronger and stronger. I don't know, I've told this story before, and it still has a lot of meaning to me. I grew up with perfect eyesight. It wasn't until I was 45, actually on my 45th birthday, I had an eye test, and the optometrist says to me, well, guess what? You need reading glasses, or you could use reading glasses. And more than 20 years later, I still have reading glasses and still need them, I guess, more and more. But vision, therefore, is on my mind, and vision is something which is a gift from God, and we're not allowed to take it for granted. Your tap on the shoulder might be difficulty in reading or need of corrective lenses of some sort, and then you don't take vision for granted. Every single morning we have a bracha, a blessing, where we acknowledge that God is the pokeach ivrim, the one who gives sight to the blind. And I understand that bracha as reminding ourselves not to take vision, good vision, for granted. So your tap on the shoulder is the need for reading glasses. Your heavier reminder could be eye trouble, and it just keeps going on, eventually to cataracts and eventually to blindness. I'm not wishing this on anybody, and I'm not saying that this is the whole story, but certainly a person going blind and realizing only then how valuable his gift of sight had been to him is getting the sledgehammer. So if we were to keep mitzvot and love doing mitzvot and educate our children to do mitzvot and to love to do mitzvot, then hopefully we wouldn't need a sledgehammer of the tochacha. It would be sufficient to have incorporated into our daily Shema this passage of Ahoya im Shamoa, and not take things for granted. Read it carefully, say it with meaning, and respond in a positive way to it. That's the story. Before I move on to another topic from B'chukotai, I want to give a math challenge that belongs to the Omer period. In the printed Torah tidbits, it appeared 2 weeks ago, and then last week, a comment about it, and in this issue, the solution. So, if you haven't seen it yet, and you're just listening, then either take the challenge or give it to a child or a grandchild, or to a friend, or whatever. And it's just an interesting thing to see if people get it or not. The question is, what is the sum of all numbers mentioned in the counting of the Omer on all 49 nights, by one who counts faithfully every single night. Now, the first answer that many people will give, they'll make a little calculation, and they'll come up with 1,225, which is the sum of the numbers from 1 through 49, which is not the right answer to what I'm asking. And that is only for those who know how to add up the numbers 1 to 49 without actually adding all the numbers up, because that's a tedious thing to do and people give up on that. But there is a method of doing it by adding the 1 and the 49 and multiplying that by 49 and dividing the whole thing by 2. It's a fairly simple thing to do, but it's not the full answer. The fact is that last night we counted 30, which is 4 weeks and 2 days, which means the sum of the numbers we counted just last night was not 30, but 36. Similarly for the rest of the Omer and for all of the Omer. So the question remains, what is the sum of all the numbers mentioned in the counting of the Omer for someone who counts every night? If you have access to the hard copy of Torah Tidbits or the internet version, you'll have the answer there. So this is not a contest for any listeners. This is just something, mostly in my mind, it's in honor of a regular listener from Rochester, New York, with the initials MG. And specifically because this is the type of question, although I don't think I ever actually asked this one, that would have been a top germ question way back when. For anyone who does not know what that means, don't worry, you're in good company. But if you know what I mean, then you have that extra incentive to do the problem. And anyone can be challenged with that. And when they, if they do finally get the 1,225, you say, nice job in adding the numbers 1 to 49. But that's not all the numbers we say when we count the Omer. And then you send them back to the drawing board, and hopefully someone will come up with the correct answer. I could tell it to you now, but in case you haven't seen it in the hard copy, then it's a challenge for you as well. I mentioned earlier that Bechukotai is a relatively small sedra with 78 psukim. It ranks 46th out of 54 sedras, which means there are only 7 sedras that are shorter than it. And more than that, the distribution of verses in the 7 aliyot, when you call people to the Torah on Shabbat, are very disparate, if that's the right word. The Kohen is called, and 3 psukim, which is the minimum, are read for him. The same 3 that I read at the beginning of the show. Levi gets 4 psukim. I'll skip Shlishi for a moment, for dramatic effect. Revi'i gets 15 psukim. Chamishi, 6 psukim. Shishi, 7, and Shavi'i, 6. Shlishi, the third aliyah, happens to be the longest Shlishi in the whole Torah. And coming from a short sedra, that's an accomplishment, has 37 psukim. 3, 4, 37, 15, etc., the numbers I gave you before. Very, very wide fluctuation. And the 37, which is almost half, right? 37 times 2 is 74. There are 78 psukim. So almost half the psukim are taken up by that 1 out of 7 aliyot, shlishi. And that's because the entire tochacha is always contained in 1 aliyah. And it begins with a good note and ends with a good note, so as not to begin or end on the sour note and the sharp, picante note of the tochacha. And that's the way aliyot are apportioned sometimes. In any event, right after the tochacha, the rest of the sedra contains a number of mitzvot for the small size of the sedra and the small amount of space left. It's kind of a lot also. And I wanted to address two of those mitzvot. One is called Timura. And when I describe it, I hope you will see something that is special or unique or different. Different is the best word here about the mitzvah of Timura. Little background. First of all, a person, a Jewish person, has the really incredible power of his speech, which can change in a dramatic way the status of certain things. I now specifically refer to an animal, let's say a lamb, where a sheep owner who has a newborn lamb, not its mother's first, a regular birth, that animal is his property. If the person were to say, I hereby designate this animal to be a sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple, then that animal becomes sacred because the person declared it that way. No act was performed. A person uttered the sanctification of an animal, and so be it. The animal is now sacred. For anyone to use that animal for personal use would be a violation of a serious sin called sacrilege, me'ila. The animal is sacred and must be brought to the Beit HaMikdash and given over to be used as a sacrifice. That's an oversimplification. There are some details I'm leaving out, but that's the basic idea. The next thing you should know is that this ability to sanctify an animal applies today. So you might say, wait a minute, we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, and we don't have an altar, and we can't bring it as a sacrifice. So what's the point of saying it? The answer is that there's no point in saying it. In fact, it's counterproductive and it's forbidden. But the power to sanctify an item, an object, in this case an animal, still exists in our time. Okay, file that. Let's continue with Timura. A person in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, we'll say, has designated an animal as sacred. He now has a change of heart. He had designated a sheep, and his goats are really more prolific, and he has many more goats than he needs, and not enough sheep, and he would like to exchange the sacredness of the animal, one for the other. So he takes a goat and says, let this be the korban instead of this. First of all, that act fails because you cannot remove, even though you had the power to make the animal sacred, you cannot remove its sanctity. Second, the person is penalized by the second animal, in this case the goat, becomes sacred as well. V'hayahu utemurato kodesh l'Hashem. The animal and the one that you tried to exchange for it are both sacred. So you did the wrong thing. It didn't accomplish what you set out to accomplish. And the penalty, in part, is that the second animal is sacred also. Let's go back a step. The thing that I find very different and intriguing about Timura is that usually a violation of a rule in the Torah involves something that actually takes place. If you're not allowed to cook milk and meat, and you take meat and you cook it in milk, then you are in violation of the Torah's prohibition of basar b'chalav because something happened. What happened? You cooked meat in milk. Not allowed to do that. Not allowed to steal. A person stole. That something happened. What if a person stole something and turns out that it's his? Then he didn't do an act of stealing. There's usually, almost always, an act or something that happens when a person violates a mitzvah in the Torah. In the case of Temura, nothing happens. My attempt to remove the sanctity of this particular animal, which either I had consecrated or was consecrated by whatever rules that there are, didn't work. It can't work. I could say it over and over, this animal should not be sacred, this animal should not be sacred. It's still sacred. So here, the sin is not doing the wrong thing, it's attempting to do the wrong thing. Because you can't do it. What you can do is attempt to do it, and that's a sin. So that's one of the things that I find intriguing about Temura. Furthermore, Temura can carry with it a punishment of whipping. In addition, makot, in addition to the penalty of the second animal being kodesh, in addition to the fact that you can't accomplish what you tried to do, which is not doable, and that means there was no act involved at all. And that usually is never punishable by human courts, and here it can carry the punishment of makot. It means that we're dealing with a very unusual kind of mitzvah. The other mitzvah I wanted to talk about a little bit is ma'aser behemah, the tithing of animals. It goes like this. If a person owns cows, goats, or sheep, or any combination thereof, and in any given year there are newborn calves or kids or lambs, then if the person has at least 10 newborn calves or a total of 10 newborn goats or sheep, he is commanded to tithe them in the following manner. He makes an enclosure. He brings, let's say, his 27 lambs, newborns, within the last year into that enclosure. There's an opening in the enclosure which one lamb is able to walk out at a time. He takes a mother sheep outside that opening, and the mother sheep bleats a certain way and attracts these lambs. And the lambs come out one at a time. Maybe they jostle each other to get out, I don't know. But they count. The owner counts how many come out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He cannot influence which animals go out of the opening. They have to go out naturally, but he counts them. When he gets to 10, he declares the 10th animal sacred. The category of sacred animal, it's called ma'aser, ma'aser behema, the tithe of an animal. He continues, 20, sacred. There are only 7 left. He stops because it goes to the integer value of the total that he has divided by 10. No, the total that he has divided by 10, the integer value thereof. And that's how many animals are sacred. So he's got 2 animals, which he marks with a smudge of paint on the tail or whatever, and they are sacred. He must bring these animals to the Beit HaMikdash, to the temple, and offer them within their first year of life as a sacrifice known as Maser Behemah, most of which is returned to him to eat with his family, in a state of ritual purity for a certain period of time. I think it's a day, a night, and a day. And he's allowed to eat it with any food he wants. And that's the mitzvah of Maaser Behema. Very little time left to finish up, so let's do it quickly. The fact of the matter is that Maaser Behema is a mitzvah that applies in our time. However, since we can't finish the process by bringing it to the Beit HaMikdash in our time, the rabbis have banned the fulfillment of that mitzvah, which again I say is a sad thing, that there is a mitzvah which instead of teaching us how to fulfill, they have to tell us we're not allowed to fulfill it. That's another story. One of the details of Maaser Behema I didn't mention is that if the 10th animal, or 20th animal, etc., is blemished and not fit for the altar, then it is not sacred. But since you can't guarantee, because you can't manipulate the animals as to which one will pass through the opening, 10th, 20th, etc., then we just don't do the mitzvah today, and there is no loss to anything having not done the mitzvah. With no more time to tell you any more, I will wish you a Shabbat Shalom. Lehish Tameah.